Dave, you sound more intelligent when you're talking about the... I love how you don't... There's no dialogue here.
Yeah.
I have no sound whatsoever except for the score. And,
I mean, beautiful. I mean, a lesser composer would just be really going over the top and melodramatic on this thing. And
a lesser filmmaker. Well, I mean, we can...
No.
We can,
well, a lesser composer and a lesser maker.
Well, lesser, you know, less collaboration, I guess you should say, because, you know, Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich, they're, you know, did Godzilla, for God's sake. Anyway, but no, I was very thrown off by how completely just the silence in the audience was enough for me to, like, say, okay, I give a damn now.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly... You know, this isn't... Okay, it's not one of the greatest films you'll ever see.
No, it's
I
not.
Mean, there are better films, obviously. There are much better films out there. And it's not necessarily the smartest movie you'll ever see. But
kick some ass.
It does really... It's a good piece of storytelling for what it is. It's a very good piece of storytelling for what it is.
I can't remember how many times I went to see this in the theater. I think I saw it at least 4 or 5 times.
I think I saw a lot of movies. I saw a lot of movies that year multiple times. I remember 96, I think is one of the best years I've seen as far as escapism goes. I saw this 8 times, I think.
Goodness.
Yeah. I'm not even going to tell you how many times I saw Ransom, because that would just be immensely disturbing if you didn't know the fact that my mother was a Mel Gibson fan.
Yeah.
But, huge Mel Gibson fan. I remember trying to see this for the first time. I was going to go, you know, they had one of the night before sneak preview things. It was one of the first ones where I really remember them doing it. Yeah, we were going to go after Olympic Band, so it's like, okay, we decided, okay, we're going to try to go see this that night.
Yeah, Brian, explain what Olympic Band is, because I'm sure you
got it. You know, 1996, the Olympics.
Where we live.
Which is where we are. Yeah, where we live. And we had an Olympic Band made up of high school and college students from the state of Georgia. And
who got to be conducted by John Williams, by the way. Right.
We never got conducted by John Williams.
It was
John Williams was there on opening night of the Olympics.
Right.
And we were all excited because of, you know, forget Bill Clinton being there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We were all excited because John Williams was there.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, see, musicians have different priorities as far as important people.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even the ASYO they got conducted by. They got conducted by... the guy at Eastwood.
Number.
Oh, this is such a funny scene.
Yeah.
You got a gun?
Wouldn't you tell... A logical person would say, guys, duck. Of course.
But, you know, for the comic relief...
It does
relief,
sort of defeat the purpose.
It brings you right back to the comedy, though.
Yeah.
The fun of it all. I love hearing Will Smith in the background. What the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
You don't like the camera isn't on him, but you hear him in the background. I love that.
And you can tell.
What the hell are you doing?
But anyway, going back to Olympic Band for a minute. Yeah, I'm. Dave and I were actually part of the Olympic Band, as well as some other.
As
people.
Was I.
Ron was not part of the Olympic Band, for the record.
I played second shepherd horn.
Whatever. Anyway.
Enter the
and so anyway, and you know, we were having rehearsals like. Every day, for the most part, for like a month and a half or so. And, anyway, after, and we had, rehearsals that went late at night, you know, day that this opened, and day they had a sneak preview of this. And, so I was, my mom and I, who go to see a lot of movies together, we're going to go see this at one of the sneak previews. And so I went home, you know, and we just got in our car and just drove out to theater, and of course we didn't have tickets, so naturally it was sold out. Night before, we made sure we got our tickets ahead of time, and ended up getting in late. I think we missed like the first 6 or 7 minutes of the movie, but we saw it and just absolutely loved it. And actually, Dave and I and a bunch of people after Olympic Band went to go see it one night. But I remember. And I remember seeing this. This was one of the first movies where...
Wasn't this one of the first movies?
I really felt like you could see the audience getting into it.
Wasn't this one of the first movies to really bring back the summer blockbuster? Was it not? I mean, I feel that. I feel very strongly about that when I say this. Because, I mean...
I don't know. I mean...
What did you have prior to this, though? I mean, not a whole lot.
Well, Twister was a couple months before Twister, this. I mean, that was very much a big summer blockbuster.
Yeah,
year before didn't really have much as far as, like, big blockbusters in the summer. I mean, you have Apollo 13 and Braveheart, but, I mean, nothing that really just blew you away. 94, I mean, you had Speed, you have Lion King, Forrest Gump, and stuff like that. The year before that was Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
Need I say more?
I guess.
Well, Jurassic Park and Fugitive, but this is one of the better ones. Mm-hmm. In recent years, and actually, summer of '96 had some. Really
I mean, sometimes you just go. You can't help but go a couple of years without having a real, without having a real gold mine.
Yeah.
As far as, I mean, I think Jurassic Park happened before this. As far as I'm concerned.
Lion King and Forrest Gump, because they all.
Well, Lion King and Forrest Gump. I love those movies, but
yeah.
I mean, they're just movies that I feel, and they're movies that I don't. You know,
I mean,
they don't stay with me.
As far as, like, event effects-driven blockbusters, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first one since Jurassic Park.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Unless, I like this. You think you can do all that bullshit you just said? And
totally
this
saves
one
moment.
Of the, I think, one of the best on-screen pairings in recent memory. Even though it's for, like, not even a third of the movie.
Mm-hmm. And these two characters hadn't even met each other prior
to
this.
There was a lot of improv between them. This is another inside joke for them. The fact that he's named Nimziki. Another inside joke for Emmerich and Devlin.
That they don't exactly explain.
Well, I mean, people somewhat familiar with, like, their history with, like, Stargate in particular, I think. You sort of heard some stories of that.
I like this round of the world montage.
Yeah, and I like the way the music changes.
Yeah,
you know, here you sort of get a British feel to it and stuff like. It sounds
it's the
like
same theme, but
very,
it's given a different spin with every sequence. Like, you know, I guess is this supposed to be British and Iraqi military right here?
Evidently, although
Israel.
Not,
it's like a combination.
It just happens to be.
It's from the bloody Americans. They want to organize a counteroffensive.
That guy was later on Drew Carey, I think.
Well,
here you have the sort of Russian type sound.
What I didn't like about this is that, you know, they kind of on America to throw it all together, you know. And everyone else is kind of sitting around waiting. I'm sure that didn't go over too well.
Well, such is the case with American movies. We always come up with everything. I mean, this is one of the most blatantly patriotic movies in recent memory. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you know.
Well, it's all being done with Morse code. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Pilots are coming up short.
Find them. God, what was I going to say? I can't remember. Well,
this important. Is where we get into.
Yeah, here you get if you find the 2-disc DVD set. I think it's out of print by now. They have the alternate ending, and you have a little part of this which is altered.
Originally, he was
in the part of
the counteroffensive.
Yeah.
Now, this character here, played by Alec Baldwin's brother, what's his first name?
Adam Baldwin originally turns
Randy Quaid away and says, go sleep it off, blah, blah, blah. Which kind of...
And I can't remember, was he... I assume he was still Vietnam that.
No, the news story with the two rednecks, that whole Vietnam subplot story was added in later on.
I thought that was changed. Yeah, because I thought it was just, he was just a crop duster.
Right. Until we got into this.
Yeah.
But then the whole Vietnam subject added in, and like that was added into the news footage.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more interesting DVD extras is you get to see all the news footage without the disturbances and everything. That's kind of there's kind of like a neat little featurette.
They call it a mockumentary, although anybody who's ever seen a Christopher Guest film knows better. It's more just a gratuitous promotional tool. But no, you're not.
Did he just wink at the camera?
Probably. It is that type of movie. I mean, it's not the type of movie where you can put, hey kids, it's Mark Hamill on there, but anyway.
Like, who's ever going to be a dress too tight for her?
Yeah, really.
Come on.
Rance Howard, Ron Howard's father.
Again, this is all just great character stuff.
Yeah,
and it's nothing about nothing about the invasion here. Nothing about special effects. Yeah. Nothing special effects.
I mean, it really is. You could almost make an argument that this is really more character driven than it is effects driven, which.
I don't think there is any argument there. I think it is very much a character-driven...
Some people would argue that. People who weren't big fans of this movie,
right,
or as big of fans of this movie as I think all three of us are, I think it's safe to say that,
right,
would say it is more effects-driven than character-driven, but I don't see that. I mean, you really do get a sense of the human aspect in this.
There's actually a very similar scene in The Patriot.
Yeah,
I think if you know your Dean Devlin role,
I never thought about that way.
Very so similar.
Except that was written by somebody else.
Yeah,
but you can see the symmetry between the two.
You can tell that the filmmakers just happened to
Yeah.
I don't know about this speech.
Maybe it's a bit over the top, bombastic, patriotic, but
yeah, it's not one of the better.
It's a bit
ones, but it's
too gung ho patriotic, but it. Let's put it this way: this movie is called Independence Day, open 4th of July weekend. Right. What the hell else are you expecting?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, if you're expecting not to get a patriotic movie, boy, are you mistaken?
And I'm just thinking, all the movies out there that have the big speech as the big guys pulled together.
This was an homage to
rank. This is probably not in the top 10, but it's not in the bottom 20, 30, 40, 50.
This is an homage to Henry V, is it not? Henry the...
I don't know.
Or, well, some Shakespeare play. But again, I think one of my more favorite stories told by the commentary is that the studio was not crazy about the idea of calling this movie Independence Day. And they knew that they would just be hammering it home if they had Bill Pullman say what he says at the end of the speech.
Yeah, but I feel it's a rather rousing speech.
I feel it.
Yeah, that,
I
mean,
it's a rousing speech. You feel it?
It's
it's better. It's definitely better than which one was it we just saw? Matrix.
Oh yeah, that's definitely
better than that speech.
Matrix Reloaded.
Oh God.
So like I said,
don't even get me started on Reloaded. It's definitely not in the bottom 100.
You know, but it's, I don't think it's
that box, was so. A bit much.
Yeah, that was
having
that,
the guy.
Yeah, that was really bad.
I mean,
really
you see that in the previews, and you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, you got the fog, you got the smoke, and you got the dramatic.
Although I will say, as far as like gung-ho patriotism, this tops both Armageddon and Pearl Harbor combined.
Right.
Oh, God, without question.
Not that I'm now a Michael Bay fan, because I love The Rock and am a reasonable fan of Bad Boys. It's not one of my favorites, but it's not one of my least favorites. But, I don't know, I just am not a fan of those two movies, Armageddon and Pearl Harbor.
I mean, they would never let the president fly in airplanes. Don't let you know that right now.
No, they wouldn't. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those cool things you get to see.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's like, yeah, he's the type of president that you can see him going into mm-hmm. plane. I mean, it's like seeing Harrison Ford's president kick butt in Air Force One.
Right.
You wouldn't see it in the real world.
Right.
But you would see it in that movie because you buy him as that character.
It's a movie just filled with stuff that you want to end.
Yeah.
Just in case. Again, it's like, Well, the thing is, it's poignant, but it's poignant without being, you know, kind of like, just you know, I'm sorry, I said that to you the other day.
The head sentimentality.
Well, no, it's like, you know, they're not like hugging each other. I'm sorry, I said that to you the other day, and I'm sorry that, you know, I wasn't a good father, and which is kind of refreshing, in my opinion. You know, and it was like, I'm sorry I left you for, you know.
God. Love this theme. I mean, I don't know what exactly to call this theme. I mean, it's not necessarily just Will Smith's theme. It's not necessarily a love theme. I mean, it's just a great piece of music.
More stuff that you want to see.
Yeah.
It's like,
almost put a hex on the damn thing. And it's like, you see those looks and it's like, oh. What does that mean? Yeah. I do like what Dean Devlin says in the liner notes on the soundtrack. He says, leave it to a Brit to write some of the most stirringly patriotic music he's ever heard. That was obviously 2001. If you don't know that well, shame on you.
Cheap laugh.
Very cheap laugh. I picked a hell of a day to quit drinking.
Yeah, more stuff that was added in much later.
Yeah.
His daughter's pretty cute. She was in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, and Harvey Fierstein in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, very
too.
True.
Of
course, the name is Simone.
Yeah.
This is important. I got it, Fat Lady.
In Bill Pullman's daughter, she is. I know she's been in something else. I can't remember what else she
was.
Been.
It was after this, though, wasn't it?
It was after
this. She's pretty darn young in this movie.
But I can't remember what movie it was.
Yeah, the fact that he figures out how to fly this thing so soon is kind of. Yeah,
well, I
right.
mean, they've had. It's one of those things where it's like. It's sort of. Explained in scenes where you see where they sort of explain that they've studied this thing, they've sort of figured some things out, but not all everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's one of those things where that scene will have been helpful in explaining right. the
but
how
again,
he
it,
gets to.
If, you know, it was.
I mean,
again,
was
it was one of the weaker,
a couple really
more
cheap laughs in it, but still.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's what I was saying. It was
exposition.
There were some pretty cheap laughs, and you know it would have been a little. It was just a good thing that it was taken out because it was just one of the more weaker scenes.
Yeah.
I've got to give
you
one
shot
of these.
In Empire Strikes Back, where Luke sees the Millennium Falcon going.
Is
off
that
those
you know? Falls. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I think my mother first pointed that out to me. It's like, yeah, I see it. These two just really have a great
rapport.
I mean, really spectacular. Where do you think?
I think our secret's out and they're headed straight for us. What the hell was I thinking?
This is a nice little moment for Will Smith.
It is a really nice little moment. And, you know, you think you're just going
to
be...
And a little foreshadowing to Men in Black, too, if you think about him that way.
He was basically offered Men in Black right after this movie came out.
I have no doubt.
I think, you know, Steven Spielberg called him on the phone personally and asked him
to do that.
It was a little risky, though, doing two alien movies in a row. You know?
Yeah.
But they're so
different, though,
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, they're just, you know, there's no different, or so different that it's like, you know.
We got to work on our communication. They are very different,
and
they were both big hits for very different reasons. So.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, or something. Oh. I mean, the effects really do hold up quite well in this movie. You know, 7 years removed, they really do hold up reasonably well. I like the... There's a line in the first season of Buffy... in one of the episodes that deals with a monster gets in the internet, and the resident computer teacher of the high school, you know, the sort of British know-it-all is trying to figure out a way to do it, and he says, well, why don't you just do some sort of computer virus, and the computer teacher goes, well, you've seen way too many movies. Just how I get that little bit in. It has nothing with this movie, but it's a funny little thing.
This is kind of another gee whiz moment.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think.
The gee whiz factor has not ran out.
No. I mean, I could sort of think of... I'm trying to think of, like, what movie you could compare this to.
You can't.
I mean...
I don't think you can.
You really can't. I really can't think of anything. I mean, I was tempted to say, like, the end of the special edition of Close Encounters, which had you actually seeing the spaceship, or you could see getting into the Death Star in A New Hope,
right.
And stuff like that. But I mean, there really isn't any precedence, except I don't know. I haven't seen there might be some sort of precedence in that, but. No, I mean, from what I can think of, I can't think of anything. This is pretty... And it's a very fresh-looking spaceship. I mean, you've really... It's one of those things where you really haven't seen anything like it before. And I like how they do it to where you see the enormity of how big this thing really is.
You know, and there was a problem with Godzilla in that, you know, it seemed as if he was... I kind of like cringe sometimes when I see the effect shots that kind of like show the enormity of everything that's going on in Independence Day, because I'm reminded of Godzilla and how painful it was to like watch Godzilla almost seem as if he was changing size every other shot.
Hmm.
Did you ever notice that? I don't know.
I haven't seen Godzilla since like opening day.
Neither have I.
So.
But I mean, that was something I read in a review.
Since I've seen it.
That was something I read in a review before seeing it, and I couldn't help but like notice it after that.
Yeah.
After when I was watching the movie, that you know got seemingly gets for some scenes, and then gets kind of slims down to like a more convenient size so we can fit into another scene. So, but yeah, the enormity factor in this film. It does not ever.
This tape. Crap.
Now, Dave, being a computer science major, how realistic is this exactly?
I mean, negotiating with hosts. I mean, you don't even know what the host is. I mean, I guess I guess they're connected to the network when they dock with that thing, which is actually a pretty cool.
That's why I was thinking That's why I was thinking of as far as okay, well, how are they connected to this? And, but that's the only thing I could think of too.
But I mean, just the thought of him somehow figuring out that code, and then they're automatically able to communicate with sort of the central whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know about.
Well,
that.
I mean, also, you know, you have to sort of take into account that, I mean, granted, this is, think about it, it's still over a matter of a day.
Right, right.
But, I mean, you know, he's now has sort of the brain trust over Area 51 that can help him with this, too.
Right.
Maybe think of stuff. So, I mean,
I mean, you can make it work in your mind, you know.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, if you overanalyze this movie, you're going to find holes.
Of course.
Bottom line.
This is like most movies, you know. I mean, especially these action science movies.
I mean, this, you know, they're most science fiction, most of the best science fiction movies deal with ideas, first and foremost. I mean, they're not so much about the visual aspect, though the great ones combine the both of them exceptionally well. I mean, this is a lot more along the lines of Star Wars and Star Trek, where the more action adventure type. And so, I mean, yeah.
Who remembers hearing a fairly big cheer here when they?
Oh, like I said, I mean, this was one of the first movies in a while, or probably the first movie I remember where it's like the audience just completely got into it and was cheering at different places, laughing and all that stuff. And it's like,
and then, surprisingly moved in other others.
I mean, they just absolutely loved it. I mean, this was truly an audience movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Real crowd pleaser.
Yeah. It's a kick-ass popcorn flick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't try to analyze it beyond
that. All right, Mr. President, here we go. Payback's a bitch. This is my favorite Jeff Goldblum moment.
Yeah.
Well, it's coming up, I guess.
It's coming up, yeah. Yeah, what about all those people? This is more disaster film thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is more disaster film than science fiction film. I mean, yeah, obviously this. And we actually saw quite a few disaster sort of end of the world type films.
This was and Twister really did kick off quite a few
string
after this summer. I mean, like, you know, stuff. You had Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones and Dante's Peak,
Armageddon and Deep Impact.
It's kind of uncanny. Yeah. It's kind of uncanny when you think about how this particular summer kind of like kicked off the whole disaster movie craze.
Oh shit.
Hide. Nobody's perfect. Yeah, there was like a really painful moment here that's cut out right here with having to do with like the Randy Quaid's daughter and another boy she'd met,
which you got to see in the cutscene.
Unfortunately,
but you don't see in this one.
Unfortunately, you get to see in the cutscenes. And oh, really? Yeah, that's a beautiful shot right there.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah.
Good stuff right there.
This is some good shit. I mean, I'm sorry.
They're just now thinking of this?
Yeah, this is,
Star Wars! Sorry.
You okay there, Brian?
I don't know what's come over me. I mean, this cold is just not going away. favorably comparable to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's be honest.
Forgivable comparison.
Forgivable comparison. So long as no Ewoks show up, I mean, I guess people are cool with it.
That's pretty powerful. Dean Devlin's voice right there.
Yeah.
Saying, I'm on it. Which he loves to point out in both.
Good God.
He loves to point that out. Sorry, I'm late, Mr. President. Yes, the biggest cheer I heard in theater all year long.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean,
and
just
this would not have happened if they had the original ending, which was him in a biplane with a missile strapped to the side.
And it was originally going to
be purely Doctor Strange. Well, not purely Doctor Strangelove, but very obviously an homage to.
And it was originally going to be an intentional suicide mission.
Yeah, but smart, quite intelligently, they decide no.
Yeah.
You have to have the moment where he decides that he's got to do
bum,
this.
Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah. Bum, I mean,
bum,
oh.
Bum, 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 bum.
I got nothing else to say about this score. It's great.
Look at him coming through.
Well, I've got other stuff I can say about this score, but not right now. This next part's a little bit cliche in terms of score. I like how it sort of goes with the beat of what you see on the screen for that. Or at least in that first moment. But
I don't know how realistic those screens are.
Love that anvil right there.
Yeah.
You get to, the thing is, you get to see him make the decision to.
Yes, thank you for changing this ending. It worked so much better.
Ron, I think you did show me the ending with the biplane.
That was an ad lib when they originally filmed the biplane ending, and they just decided to keep that.
And they didn't they have to re-record it because of the fact that they changed it, and they were worried that they weren't going to get the same sort of intensity of the reading. Or maybe it was this part. Oh, sweet explosion. Sweet explosion.
90% of that is computer graphics, too, is the thing. It's not all staged. It's all computer-generated fire.
Yeah, I mean, all this entire is very reminiscent of, like, the end of A New Hope, when at the very last second, at the moment of desperation, you have Han Solo coming in and saying, come on, kid, let's blow this thing and go home. Except Han Solo lived at the end of that.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Nice little... This really does have some excellent transitions in the mood of the music. And there's one more coming up that I just absolutely love. Yeah.
Doesn't that crash? I was like, get out of here!
Yeah.
Doesn't that crash like directly on top of Area 51? Doesn't that like trap them inside there? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Maybe land it off to the side.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's all I can think of.
I want to bring those sons of bitches down.
The movie's not quite done yet.
You still have Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum.
The Fly and the Fresh Prince.
This is another nice little moment. It's like...
It's like, what the hell are you talking about, Checkmate? What are you talking about?
He's a smart man. He knows what chess is.
Well, I'm just saying, like, he wasn't, like, with him... He wasn't...
Yeah, I get
earlier in the film, yeah. You know, when he established the whole checkmate catchphrase. You know.
That's true.
That's why I laugh there. I'm more than happy to explain any reason that I would be laughing when no one else is. Just feel free to ask. Enter two government officials too.
That's no. Never use that again. Just never do. Please.
Now this is just popcorn flick heaven right here. Popcorn flick heaven. Goodbye. Nothing but love.
Huh? Do you have any idea what? Do you think they have Andy?
Not a chance in hell. Good night.
Now this laugh is another one. Sort of references the laugh at the end, really twisted laugh of the Predator at the end of Predator. Ooh. This is completely Return of the Jedi, except for the talk about the fat lady. But yeah, this is very much Return of the Jedi.
Well,
yeah, let's be honest.
That's a forgivable comparison, I think.
I know, but still. Again, Return of the Jedi. That was the obvious influence. Stop side speed driving. This is the longest 30 seconds.
Let's go faster.
Reference to
Jurassic Park. This is a pretty long 30 seconds here.
But then again, I mean, time is always mostly exaggerated in movies. It's like that last minute before the bomb goes off takes like 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Now this is...
Yeah.
That makes me cringe every time.
Why?
It's because it's such a tight squeeze, I guess.
Well, actually, if you think about the size of that ship,
mm-hmm.
It probably is not as tight a squeeze as...
It looks like it. But when you think about it...
When you think about the enormity of that ship, it's probably not that small.
It'll probably still make me cringe after that. That's one of my favorite movie explosions right here.
Yeah. It looks really good.
Okay.
Well. Yeah, For some reason, it always makes me laugh to see the ship in ruins. Thanks to the Americans.
Go USA! Yeah.
Subtitle. USA! USA! USA!
That would have just been cheesy. Yeah.
And the running daughter.
Yeah.
At least it's not some baby.
And this is a transition that is just wonderful, where it's like, you go back into that other theme where it's like, you see the shift in, you know, the emotions, where it's like, you get back to Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum. It's really well done. Really? What could it be?
Maybe it's an alien. Because, you know, that's what Dean Devlin would want us to think.
All the main characters coming back together for one big happy reunion.
Yeah.
at the end of the show. Sweet. My boys Relic.
Top Gun. Star Wars. Take your pick.
Any or just Independence Day.
Or just Independence Day.
I think it works on its own. I think it works on its own.
Yeah.
On its own. I think it...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely could have been considerably more cliche.
You know what? For some very mood when I see the president just walking with his knife with him, because that kind of hammers it home, like how much of a loss this was for some people. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I'm kind of moved by just seeing the president without his wife, with his daughter. I don't know. That kind of like signifies the loss that a lot of people experienced.
Yeah.
For some reason, I'm just really moved by that.
Didn't acknowledge Jeff Goldblum's little Elvis impersonation. Oh, thank you very much. When Will Smith says Elvis has left the building.
Yeah, Hollywood ending in the third degree.
Yeah.
Which I should probably say that I'm quoting Dean Devlin on that one, but. So, yeah, that was Independence Day.
That's Independence Day.
Which, you know...
Again, I think part
which of... Which I hope to God there's never a sequel to.
I hope. Yeah, I hope so, too.
There doesn't
need... I mean,
need,
they
there
don't need one.
No, they don't.
They don't need one. I mean, let's put it this way. I can already tell you what happens. Bill Pullman's reelected. Jeff Goldblum's vice president. Will Smith is, like... Probably Captain not separate... Guard. Secretary of Defense, I think what Robert Loggia would probably be promoted to that. Patrick Tatopoulos, production designer, later to work on Dark City and Battlefield Earth.
Oh, wow. That's
thank you, Derek. Thank you, David Brenner, for editing all the crap out. Boy. So, yeah, I mean... I think we should leave it as is, guys. I mean, I'm pretty happy.
I mean,
with
I can't really.
Hey,
yay, Will Smith. So. Yay, Bill Pullman.
So I was just kind of sitting there watching the movie. I know you guys were discussing some of the musical.
Well, you had some things to contribute. Yay, Judd Hirsch.
Yeah.
Yeah, very. You know, works on a bittersweet note. On a bittersweet level, it works.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm able to appreciate it for. I mean, I was moved. I mean, I was enthralled, and I was excited, and I was, you know, and I was blown away. But I was also very moved, surprisingly. So I'm happy with this movie. I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna keep it.
shut your guys. Thumbs up. Awesome, dude. All
right.
Shut. You have any final thoughts, Dave?
No. I mean, I really do like this movie. I mean, I think it's better than Armageddon or any other kind of movies kind of like this. So I just enjoy sitting back and watching it. It's a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a popcorn flick through and through.
Right.
It's one of the best popcorn flicks. I mean, it's purely for entertainment purposes. I mean, it's nothing more, nothing less. And I love the fact that it understands that and realizes it and goes with it. And it is a lot of fun. I mean, this is probably the...
And if you ever do watch the director's cut version, you will know just how better of a movie it is because of David Brenner. So I'm not gonna... That's all I have to say. And
yeah, and I mean, this really is the sort of crown jewel in what I thought was a year for escapism in 96. I mean... Among my other favorites, Twister and Broken Arrow and Executive Decision and The Rock and
the movie we all the year we all graduated from high school, so we're all going to remember that summer like it was yesterday. Yeah. So anyway,
and,
that's
about it for me. This is Brian Scuttle,
Ronnie Haynes,
Dave Moff,
and this is Yahoo's with a Microphone.
And here come the two government officials too.
Yeah,
Brian, you cut that right.
Yeah, this is Anyway, Yahoo's with the microphone, and just ignore that last joke. Good night.
God bless.